Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, whenever you're listening. This is Davisville on KDRTLP 95.7 FM in Davis, California. You can find us anytime online at kdrt.org/Davisville. I'm Bill Buchanan. I'm your host. Thank you for listening. Well, so Davis has just gone through a local news media earthquake. Not one that topples buildings and not felt everywhere in town, but it was large enough to jolt thousands of people in Davis. We're talking about the Davis Enterprise's decision to lay off Bob Dunning, who had joined the paper in 1970 and had written his The Wary Eye news and feature column in the decades since then. His readers, surprised and angered by his dismissal, slapped back hard at the paper's decision. Bob restarted his column and his sports writing on Substack under the name The Wary One, and within a week he gained enough paid subscribers to more than replace the salary the Enterprise had paid him. This exit was repeated within days by Wendy Weitzel, who had written the paper's popular Comings and Goings column about local businesses, also for many years. She left the paper voluntarily to join Bob on Substack. She was angered by how the paper had treated him. Well, there are many, many parts to the evolving Davis news and information story. Today we're talking by Zoom with someone who's part of these latest developments, Brian Boltz, who helped Bob Dunning and Wendy Weitzel get started and quickly find audiences on Substack. So, Brian, thank you for joining us today on Davisville.
My pleasure.
So, I'd like to get a sense of your plans, but first, could you tell us a little about yourself? You grew up in Davis. I understand you're in your 40s. Mm-hmm. What do you do for a living?
I've worked as an entrepreneur with a number of businesses over the years. I currently manage Behively, which is an education technology provider. We do websites and communication tools for schools. And I manage Techaby, which is an IT provider that also provides services for schools, but we're looking at branching out into other categories as well. And I have a few other aspirations for different things. We're starting an AI company that'll focus on education. We're also having some solutions for small businesses. So I have my hands in a handful of different areas.
So tech, and this is all in Davis. Why are you locating this in Davis? Typically, that's a Silicon Valley is the home turf for a lot of this kind of work.
Oh, that I would attribute to the roller coaster of a small company and entrepreneur. It's a long story to thoroughly answer that question. The short version would be, I had no plans of being in Davis when I started these businesses. I was actually living in Washington, D.C. We had a challenge with investment. We had an investor get us started, and then it didn't work out for lots of reasons. It was either give up or move back home with my then pregnant wife and move back in with my parents to keep the adventure going, which I did. And then we rebuilt here. And that was about 2008. So about 20 years ago. But yeah, if you had asked me, was Davis the plan? No, it was never the plan. But I will tell you, I grew up in this town. I love this town. I was gone for about 10 years and then returned. And that the roots of family and the actual environment that downtown provides and the nature of the universities actually got a lot of benefits. It's a small town. I think that's maybe tough for small businesses to grow, but we've made it work.
So why get involved in the local news and information business?
I have kind of very personal reasons for that. I have gone through my own perception of the impact of national and local journalism just decline. When I was listening to, bear with me, I'm not going to get the stats exactly right, but I was hearing a contrast of, say, the number of journalists employed in the 90s, and it was about 500,000 nationally, I think, versus it is now, and it's around 100,000 or less. I'm horrified. I'm appalled at the civil impact that has on folks who want information, which is me and my friends and my cohort. So it's a topic I've been worried about. And I feel like there's now a unmet need. And so when I learned of Bob's situation and then some of the should I do this? Should I do that? How does Substack work? It let me act in a manner to address that concern.
How did you and Bob connect? How did you guys meet each other?
Techaby and Behively sometimes do business in town when requested, like if there is a business that wants help. An example is the Hot Dogger, who we do their website. And so through that, we helped Bob's wife, Shelley, solve a couple technical problems through our Techaby business. And it just led to some really nice conversations with her over the past few months. She's a neighbor. And so she mentioned what had happened to me and my colleague, April. And I just was like, yeah, you should do that. How can I help? And then it led to into a quick conversation, which then was like, like the spark was lit. It was like, off we go. So anyway, so that's where the connection came from. Now I've known of Bob forever, both through St. James, and I was a classmate of one of his older daughters. And so I've just known of the family for a very long time. They're about my age as well, the older kids.
Yeah. But of course, if you grew up in Davis too, I mean, I imagine you saw the Enterprise as a kid, and Bob was a big presence in town. That's part of the reason that this reaction occurred. I mean, he emceed a lot of events. His column won some awards. Okay, and then you met Wendy through Bob, I imagine.
I met Wendy. We had emailed a few times, and then I met her at the launch party that we did for Bob, right? So one of the things I've been just encouraging and suggesting is promotional activities, like having a launch party. And I met Wendy then, and then everything just started accelerating from there for her as well.
This was the launch party. I think it was mid-May, and
May 15th.
May 15th, a hot evening there, but in the Breezeway, but next to Pete's downtown, and that's also where Shelly has her business in there. It was
It was a blast.
quite crowded. So, what is your role in all this? I mean, I gather you because Substack isn't exactly. I mean, a lot of people use it to put up blogs, and Substack makes it easy to do that. So, what's your role? And in a minute, I'm going to want to know what your plans are. But first, what's your role just in getting their columns out there and finding subscribers and so on?
Well, I mean, some of it is very rapidly evolving, and there's a lot more to kind of think about a role, or even if there is an ongoing role. My role so far has been to open the pathways and to address business questions, strategy questions, how to best deploy Substack, what are the options, how do you go from having the column each of them had to having now a thriving sole proprietorship new publication, a Substack publication. I have a perspective on starting businesses, some of which have succeeded, some of which haven't, that I looked at what their transition was, looked at what the Substack platform allows for. And basically, I think of myself, the way Bob and I have been talking about, is like, I'm the navigator, but I'm also like the jetpack. Like, when it's time to go fast, I'm the guy that goes fast. Sometimes that's really good. Other times that is too fast. But from an entrepreneur point of view, it's like you strike while the iron's hot and you go. And you work through all the challenges and the concerns, and there always are some. But a lot of it is I was that like, I don't, I that perspective of this is how you get started, and we can do this. And there were a whole bunch of questions. We were first like, well, will we get any subscribers? How many? Will it be a few dozen or 50 or 100? And we could kind of imagine what that would be. But I in one of our earlier conversations, we talked about it's going to be a journey to navigate, and we don't know exactly what's going to happen. But we have to do it anyway. My role, I think, has been more on kind of that, support, some guidance, encouragement when needed, all general, I mean, all out of goodwill, right? I'm helping them because I think you help your neighbors when they're in distress. And, should that turn into more, I mean, the story's just getting started here. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. You mentioned subscriptions. What kind of response have they gotten for Bob and for Wendy, both paid and unpaid? Do you have those stats handy?
It's been tremendous. Most paid upfront for a year. Most paid before Bob had even written anything. A tremendous number paid at the founders level, which is $350 annually to support Bob and his column. A smaller number, less than a quarter, did monthly. And for a variety of reasons, right? Maybe they don't know Substack, they're not sure, they're worried about their budget, who knows, but it'll have different reasons. And there's a multiple of subscribers that are free. The latest that Bob just posted, I'm helping with the publishing process. He has over 4,000 subscribers, approaching 4,000 subscribers, and about 1,000 paid. And he talks about that on his Substack today. And then Wendy's numbers are still just building too. She's posted one column, and her volume is going to be fascinating as well. So collectively, we've seen somewhere between 4,000 and 8,000 people take an action. That I think has been what's been most staggering for all of us involved on seeing this unfold is that means they not only did someone like learn of the thing and be like, oh, okay, that maybe I should do something. They stopped what they were doing, they got on their device, entered their email address, and then many of them funded it.
So yeah, these are the subscribers you're talking about here when they first learned about it.
Yeah, so there's subscribers that are free, meaning they've just entered their email address and identified themselves. And then there are subscribers that are paid, meaning they've paid for a year or a monthly subscription of some sort.
Yeah, and part of the reason I'm interested in the numbers is because, you know, this is a sign of the market's appetite for
Yes.
paying for writing. So if I
Yes.
understand correctly, if Bob's got 1,000 paid, and I know when I signed up, I subscribed to both.
Thank you.
Sure. Well, I mean, this sort of thing interests me.
I subscribe too.
But I want to say Bob had like a suggested rate of $70. So if you took that as an
Annual.
average of 1,000 annual, exactly, well, that'd be $70,000. And as he said in one of his columns, you know, that's more than he's getting paid. Do you have paid numbers for Wendy yet? I know her, you know, it's a different venture.
Yeah. Now, Wendy hasn't made that information public yet, so I'll be a little broad there. But you can similarly do a estimation of that as well for her. Her price point was, at least her price point as it is now, is $5 or $50 for the year with a founding subscription of 250, which a lot of people have acted on as well.
Yeah. And of course, in her case, she was not an employee of the enterprise. She was a stringer. And so, you know, Bob was getting a full salary with, you know, benefits and
Yes.
all that. Wendy was basically writing this for a freelancer's
20,
fee.
20% of her time, yeah, paid, I would
Okay.
describe as a token amount. Yeah.
All right. So here's the core question I think really a lot of people have. And that is, are you starting an online alternative to the Davis Enterprise? Is that your goal?
Gosh, at this point, it's too soon to say. I've certainly been asked that question. I was at my memorial party yesterday, and I just kept getting asked the same question over and over again. And, you know, I think your comment about the reader's appetite is really the insightful one. What do the readers want? Do the readers want an alternative? Sure seems like it to me. And then, you know, is it possible to get that collective to happen? I don't know. It could be the start. I think what's really going to, this is such a dramatic change for these, for the folks involved. Like they've gone from an institution they described as loving, that they've committed their lives to now independent. That Substack model, and just you mean, and Substack's fascinating, right? They get paid a little bit up front, and so does the credit card processor. Almost everything goes to the reader. I'm sorry, it goes to the writer. So now you have a different power dynamic. It's not we're the only show in town. It's not you've got to work for us if you're the writer. You can go straight to the reader overnight. We've seen that happen twice. And if you can get the readers, you're in business. So there's a difference in local journalism that has to embrace that power being shifted upside down. And Bob and I had the pleasure of being invited to meet one of the co-founders of Substack last Wednesday. And one of the ideas he told us about is this idea of the sovereign creator. The creator, Bob in this case, is in charge. What does Bob want to do? Well, it's up to him now. And the reason he's that sovereign is because the readers are supporting him. So there is now going to be, if there, let me put it this way, if there is going to be a local media company, it has to embrace that sovereign creator notion, in my opinion. I don't see any other way. Why? Because if you don't, if you are at odds with the writer in any manner whatsoever, the writer just leaves you and goes, and then they take their readers with them. Substack is in the same position. If Substack ever was dissatisfying to the sovereign creator, that creator can just go to somewhere else, Ghost, Patreon, and take the subscribers with them. It's fascinating. Contrast that with the architecture of a institution that says you can't even reach the reader without us, right? And that is legacy big papers, the printing press, all that kind of stuff, right? You can't even do it. There's no way. All of that is gone. All of that is gone. Now you are at, you have to then celebrate and reward that creator who can go straight to the reader too, just as easily as you. And then you have to have something to offer them that they would say, you know what, I'd like to be a part of that.
Yeah.
They're in the power position. It's fascinating.
A quick station ID. We are talking with Brian Boltz, who has been involved in helping Bob Dunning and Wendy Weitzel start their Substack columns. Basically, they're taking the work they used to do for the Davis Enterprise, Bob having been laid off by the Enterprise, recreated it on Substack and getting paid for it. by subscribers. This is Davisville on KDRT LP 95.7 FM, Davis, California, KDRT.org online. I'm Bill Buchanan. So it sounds like you're open to the idea of creating an alternative, but you're not sure this will lead to that. One question I have about
I think it's going to be what the readers want, right? Are the readers going to, are they going to pay for it? Are they willing to?
Well, and a question, of course, is what do they pay for? The old model, not just for newspapers, but for a lot of things, is, you know, you had attractions and then you had things that were important, but not lucrative. Typically in journalism, that's things like covering the local government. There's not a lot of people most of the time who are just going to pay a lot of money to find out what the city council is doing. They'll want to know, but they will read Bob.
They'll pay some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Bob's got a personality. People will pay for crime news. You know, they'll pay for things like that. The other thing about the model is, you know, similar things happen with cable TV. You used to have these bundles.
Yep.
Now it's breaking into streaming. And if I'm reading the stories correctly, people are getting impatient with the idea of streaming, that they've got to pay for 8 or 9, as many as that, different streaming services. You know, and I got to pay for BritBox, got to pay for Acorn, I got to pay for Netflix, got to pay for Disney Plus and Paramount and blah, blah, blah. Well,
if you want to pick the one that's the most broken, it's sports. How are you supposed to figure out how to watch a Kings game? I have to Google it every time.
Yeah, so
it's
that
a different answer.
So that argues that at some point, the audience, whether it's about
media
or something, says, hey, look, you know, organize it for me. Give me one monthly bill. Give me things I want to see. Run it responsibly. And then I just want to enjoy it.
Yes.
That doesn't necessarily go with a model where you've got a bunch of individual people each saying, we need 50 a year, 70 a year, 100 a year.
It's at odds with it. Absolutely. And so I'm thinking about this idea of the sovereign reader, basically exploring, and I think I'm going to do some writing on this too, talking about that role of the sovereign reader, because the reader is going to say, I'm not giving you my time or my money unless you give me what I want. And some of the power dynamic that Substack provides means that that reader has a lot of power too. You just heard me talk about the power of the creator. Well, on the one hand, it's a beautiful thing when we're all aligned, when we're all being like, okay, Substack gets paid up front, credit card gets paid up front, Bob gets paid up front, like beautiful thing. And the readers feel good about it. But the readers, they have sovereignty too for what are they subscribing to? Are they going to continue that subscription? You can lose them. They can cancel. They can be gone in a night. We just saw that happen. So I think there is what I still think of as that exhausted majority that is like, I'm not doing this. I want one package. It better be good. And I want choices. If it isn't that package, I pick a different package, but I'm not going to do this per column, per writer, per whatever thing. They might do that on the topics they love. And I think we will see an ecosystem of both, where if you really want to know sports stuff, you subscribe to 3 sports writers. But you also, if you want Sacramento journalism, YOLO journalism, whatever it is, there's this exhaust majority that is just going to say, I'm not even playing that game. Give me a package that is appealing. And I suspect that exists. I don't see my friends or my own appetite being so willing to try to figure out who is that individual reporter in an unbundled manner all the damn time, right? Because the vulnerability of a sole proprietorship publication is, as soon as you stop publishing, you're done. The publication ends. The readers say thank you, and then there's nothing to subscribe to. So that's very different than what an institution can do to step in to say, we're committed to this. Okay, and my favorite example of this, Bill, is the Free Press. They're a wildly successful, they're the big one at Substack. They have 25 writers. They have exploded in their progress. They're essentially a national, you know, commentary. They've gotten to the point where they have a daily news update. And they are Substack's single largest business. So I look at that model, and I find that also fascinating. I'm a founding subscriber there. And they have now features with superstar writers. My favorite is Nellie Bowles. I just, like, it is so enjoyable to have her column pop into my inbox on Fridays. If it's not there, I'm angry. But I'm happy to read the rest of the bundle that the Free Press provides too. I do read it.
So in a way, this sounds like a reborn newspaper, except it's digital and it pays its writers better. I mean, it doesn't have advertising.
I can take you through that. I can take you through that. Yeah.
Well, I don't know that we'll have time to go all the way through it,
Oh,
but I
sure.
mean, is that essentially what it is? You know, because
Oh, yeah.
there's this, I think, desire people have for information. I think impatience with having to find it. When I think of the Davis information ecosystem right now, I mean, it's very scattered. There's the enterprise, there's the Davis Vanguard, there's Davisite, there's social media, there's
Dave
Davisville,
Sturt. Yeah.
Davis Dirt, there's Nextdoor, word of mouth, and
Oh
now
gosh,
there's
next
these,
door.
but I mean, there's all these different pieces. There's the city's websites, there's school district bulletins. There's someone in Davis who wants to be informed, the information they're looking for is quite possibly out there, but it
It's too hard
is
to find.
hard to find, and it's unreliably reported and inconsistently reported. And so all that argues to say, yeah, bring it back to one central area. That's why I was curious about an alternative. Davis, I mean, this is happening with the news media overall. The problems the Davis Enterprise has is not unique to them. But it seems that behind it all, there's still some desire to almost sort of recreate what it was, just no longer the physical sense. And I guess I'm wondering if you see it that way.
I sure hope so. Like I look at some of the ingredients of that too. Like there is a role in that many of us as subscribers still want. We still want the local paper that has my dad's obituary in it. We still want the local paper that makes that part of, I don't know, just how we maintain a civilization, how we honor the dead. And there are folks who I think would be willing to support that kind of effort. I think there's also the news piece you mentioned, and I think there's lots of different ways to present that news in a way that cross supports the various ecosystem members too. Hey, you yes, summarize it in a way meaningful to me, but tell me your source. I might read the source if you tell me about it. I'll go read the coverage done by another outlet. Link to it for me. Substack makes it all very easy. So yeah, I very much think the change is just getting started. I think this has the potential to be very interesting with how it evolves. And it's been fascinating to be just to see the dynamicism of a business that didn't exist, say Bob's Column, overnight already sustainable, room to grow. He also now has a way to reach a national audience that he couldn't get. There are all these folks that never subscribed to the enterprise that now can read him. And there are people outside of Davis who can now read him.
Of course, they could have subscribed online. I mean, they do have an online presence. We have a few minutes left. One of the things I haven't actually disclosed, and I feel I should, is that in this information vacuum or change or whatever it is, Davis Media Access, which owns KDRT, is looking at a thing called Civic Information Hub. There's a page on the website about it. It's
I read that.
evolving. Yeah. So I disclose that here because I'm a volunteer as a DJ for KDRT. I'm a volunteer for DMA. DMA is maybe going to have some presence in this space. So I'm just trying to disclose that aspect to it. You're not thinking of advertising, sounds like. Or are you?
I think it's a violation of what the reader wants, in my opinion. Substack feels the same way. You can it gives you two masters, and I think it puts a publication at risk of violating the bargain with the subscriber. So yeah, so I don't look at it as a part of the kind of journalism I have in mind.
Another question I wanted to bring up, and I alluded to this at the start, that when Bob was laid off from the Enterprise, it was a galvanizing moment for part of the town. And then there's parts of Davis that would say, "Who's Bob Nunning?" And that's
That's right.
partly because of how things have evolved. On the campus, for example, I don't think a lot of UC Davis students have been reading the Enterprise, at least not directly. The information it develops, they might have read indirectly through social media.
Well, let me, I have one comment for you on that, which is except for sports, now Bob can cover sports in a way with relationships and support from, I mean, just look at the last column, a couple columns with the photos. They're fantastic. They look great in the format. The readers love them. So that will reach folks who just like baseball or basketball. And that coverage is now available to the whole cohort.
And I guess my question would be, if something new does evolve out of this, whether it's you or whoever, you know, reaching that audience that gradually drifted away from the traditional model of a newspaper will be part of the effort, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
One other thing I've noticed is that the Davis Enterprise, you know, the question is, what are they going to do now? I mean, I'm
Sure.
sure they felt stung. I noticed they've created a replacement for Wendy's column. I just saw it called Street Beat. One of their former sports editors, Mike Bush, I saw his byline in as a sports correspondent in a recent edition. He had left. he's replacing, I suspect, Bruce Gallaudet. He's another former Enterprise editor and sports editor who had been a sports correspondent. He left the Enterprise again, not happy with the way Bob was treated. The paper still has reporters writing about local government, community columnists, the obituaries you mentioned, the crime they cover, they have ads. How do you size them up in Davis right now? As maybe as a current competitor or just simply someone who's a business in Davis?
I had a subscription to the Enterprise until it got kicked out or canceled for some reason. I don't know why. I got an email I didn't see or anything, or it was just too hard to subscribe. And at the time, and I told Wendy this, I subscribed to the Enterprise to read her column. And then once I got kicked out, I just gave up because it was frustrating. I think there's an opportunity to evolve. I think the readers are going to use their sovereignty to subscribe or not. And I think the product itself, you know, as I've learned more about the reporters here, everyone is so complimentary. It is, they're like, these are wonderful people. They're on the mission. And I look at that and I think to myself, well, what if you could double or triple your paycheck? What if you could do that in a week? Wouldn't you do that? And I think that is going to be more the unstabilizing effect than necessarily the local media alternative yet. And so I see that potential for some as well.
We've reached the end of our half hour, but just real quickly, what's your next step?
Right. Next step now is grow Bob and Wendy's publications and help them go from a fantastic launch to situated, comfortable, build the community. They both have very different communities. So, you know, we haven't quite decided some of the details around Wendy's launch, but there's different ideas we have around that relationship she has with readers and businesses that we think would be a fun way to engage. And that community, it's like, these are now growth activities. These are fun activities. And a lot of that will be online as well. Bob is mixing it up in the comments on his columns. Those are available to him now. They weren't before. So we'll be doing both a online engagement that I think everyone's having fun doing. And then there also will be some of these, how do we reach the other readers that haven't even known this happened yet?
Well, we'll have to end it there. I'll also just note, because this is a fairly fast moving topic, we are talking on, what is today, May 28th, and this will actually air in early June. There's always a possibility something will happen between now and then that will, affect all this. But not that I know of it, that's just working off instinct. Anyway, Brian, thank you for talking with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for the conversation.
We've been talking with Brian Boltz, who is working with Bob Benning and Winnie Weitzel on their new Substack ventures. I am Bill Buchanan. This is Davis Phil on KDRT 95.7 FM, Davis, California, KDRT.org. Thank you for listening.